This is episode number 157 with data science meetup organizer and enthusiast, Marie Lubel.
Welcome to the Super Data Science Podcast. My name is Kirill Eremenko, data science coach and lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you inspiring people and ideas to help you build your successful career in data science. Thanks for being here today, and now let's make the complex simple.
Hello and welcome back to the Super Data Science Podcast. I'm very excited to have you on board today. And today I had a chat with Marie Lubel, who is one of our students in our courses, and she's taken the data science A to Z course, and now she's looking into the deep learning A to Z course as well. And it's a very interesting story for two reasons. First of all, because Marie is taking our courses, but she is actually already a data scientist. So I was interested to learn about that, that somebody who's already has a career in data science, they're taking the courses to further their studies or refresh certain things, learn new bits and pieces and fill in those gaps that might exist in the knowledge, which is a very admirable thing to do. And the second reason why this podcast can be useful to you is because we talked about meetups, and Marie has quite extensive knowledge in meetups. And starting from the second half of this podcast, we were focusing on her experience in this space. So not only does she attend meetups, but she's actually now started organizing them, and she's had quite a bit of success in that space. She knows how to put a meetup together, how to get people to come, how to get that location, and even she had some good accomplishments in the space of meetups, for which she actually was able to attend a conference in San Francisco, and she'll talk a bit more about that. So if you ever intend on creating a meetup, organizing a meetup yourself, or if you're kind of wondering whether or not you should attend a data science meetup, you can get some valuable insights from Marie in today's episode. On that note, let's dive straight into it. Without further ado, I bring to you Marie Lubel. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Super Data Science Podcast. Very excited to have you on board. And today we have Marie Lubel calling in from Canada. Marie, welcome to the show. How are you going?
Good. How are you?
I'm very good as well. And just before the show, you mentioned that it was like a snowstorm in that part of Canada where you are, and you couldn't like get out of your house for 3 days. What's going on with this weather? How are you holding up right now?
I know, it's like a crazy winter this year. On Saturday morning, ice rain started, and it has been raining like since yesterday evening, and it still took a while till all the ice was gone that we could go out safely.
Wow. I just had this thought of somebody listening to this podcast, I don't know, somewhere in a tropical country where it's blazing hot and maybe there's never been ice rain there before. It's like, what is ice rain? It's just like ice, like, is it like ice falling from the sky type of hail, like that?
Actually, it's like, it's frozen rain that is falling from the sky, but what you also see on the tree branches, actually, is that the ice stays on it. So it's a weird thing, and like what we now have, we had like 3 or 4 centimeters of ice just on the roads.
Yeah, wow, that's crazy. Okay, well, yeah. At least as you mentioned also before, in data science you can work from home, and in your role you're able to do that, so that makes things a little bit easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, all right. Well, fantastic to have you on the show. You have a very interesting background, and you're one of our students. Can you tell us in which courses you've participated of Super Data Science?
I have done the A to Z data science, and I have also looked at the deep learning data science course.
Okay, and is that how you got started into data science, or did you do that course already after you were a data scientist?
I did those courses already after that I was in data science. So what I mostly do with these ones is like having them either as a refresher or otherwise for learning new things.
Okay, and what did you think? Were they useful? Did they live up to your expectations?
Yeah, indeed, they're really useful. And for example, the part what I really loved a lot was like where you're talking about the model maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
So the different strategies when you're saying like when you should be retraining your model or in which cases you actually should be looking at a better model. So uh-huh. that's a part I really loved a lot about it. And also for deep learning, I like the part where you are explaining everything and that you also say like, these are the libraries that you use. This is the way to set everything up. So it's really interesting and nice.
Yeah.
And finally, the part I also loved a lot is where you're giving like suggestions about how you need to do presentations about data science,
uh-huh.
how you need to deal with less technical audience. So it's awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Interestingly, I was just actually somehow got to that course yesterday, to the Data Science A to Z, and I was looking exactly at that part about statistics. I think it was the case that I needed a refresher myself, and so I went into the course and I actually checked out some videos, and it was so, well, like, in a way so weird because, you know, like, it was back then I didn't have the beard and also I sounded a bit different, so it was quite strange listening to myself. Yeah, it brings up interesting memories from back then.
Yeah, can't believe so.
Yeah, all right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's going to be quite an interesting chat because on one hand, you are studying the courses, but on the other hand, as you mentioned, you already have a career in data science and like you're progressing through that. And also you are very active in your career. You're also helping others. You're arranging meetups in Canada and about, you know, engineering and data science and technical aspects. So that would be quite an interesting chat. Maybe to kick us off, tell us a bit about your career. So how did you get into the space of data science in the first place?
Okay, so when I was studying, I studied engineering with a focus on numerical simulations.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I graduated, I started a PhD in medical image computing. And then actually the subject what I was doing was actually automatically evaluating the image quality of 3D images for dentists.
Mm-hmm.
And how the dentist normally would do that, they would put like points on a skull.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would measure those points with a caliper, and then they actually would be like scanning the object and then measuring it on the radiographs and then evaluating the differences and see how accurate actually those radiographs were. But mm-hmm. the challenge with that is like they only could, for example, do like 7 or 8 measurements.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like really heavy. And there I actually worked then. I would build like a model with a laser scanner and then I would compare the measurements that I had from a laser scanner and would compare them with 3D images from the scans. And in that way, you actually would have like a data pipeline that you were building. And at the end of the whole process, you could say like, this scanner is so accurate and another scanner is so accurate. So that was actually the first part, what you could say like, which was some kind of data science work okay. that I was doing.
All right. So that's quite an interesting application of data science. And where did that take you from there?
So next I was like, year a postdoc in Belgium, and then eventually I moved to Canada, and there my first job in industry was at Maluba. Mm-hmm. And Maluba was back then like building a Siri clone, and which would mean that I was actually working as an NLP software developer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very cool. So is that deep NLP or no deep learning NLP?
No, it was no deep learning NLP because it was like in 2012, 2013.
Mm-hmm.
So back then I was more like training machine learning models with SVMs more
mm-hmm.
and also a combination with text mining. So a combination of regexes and building gazetteers and everything. And then next I also was working on NER for right. driving all the different objects, different entities that you have from the queries that or being asked at the phone.
Okay, gotcha. And what do you think of how NLP has changed over the years? You know, like given that you've looked at our deep learning course, actually not in the deep learning course. We just talk about deep learning there. We have a separate course on NLP, deep learning and NLP. But maybe you've come across deep learning and NLP together. What would your comments be on how it's changed since those days when you worked on it? Is it drastically different now, or is it not grown that much in the past, 5 years?
the main difference is actually like when I heavily was involved in the part from the NLP, that the feature engineering was much, much more important. So that you need to make sure that you had all the different list of gazetteers, and also making sure that you had clean data, where now the focus with deep learning is actually much more now on having like larger sets of data. And then actually making sure that the algorithm itself will actually find the features. So from that point of view, it's actually harder like to find the correct parameters for the deep learning algorithm, because it's actually because you have less influence on it yourself. Like when you're doing the feature engineering, you can look more like where are the gaps that I have, and then you can just feed in like extra information.
So, different approach. I think I also kind of learned a bit about that. I actually encountered that first when I was doing learning about computer vision. That in computer vision, before it was finding those features and doing the HAAR cascades and like understanding what features to identify. Whereas now it's a bit different. Right now it's more, you're right, like the deep learning algorithm is supposed to find those features on its own. So, yeah, deep learning is revolutionizing everything by the sounds of it.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. All right. And so you worked on NLP for some time, and then where did you move on to from there?
So then I moved to Desire to Learn, which was a company that is building online learning solutions. And there I was initially part of the predictive analytics team, and one of my jobs there was evaluating the predictive algorithms for the students. So there were about two types of algorithms. One was trying to predict like how well a student was going to do in a course. And the second product that we had was actually trying to recommend courses for students and giving like the courses that would make sure that the student would graduate in the fastest possible time.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah. And so my goals there was like, for example, when we would install like the recommendation system with a new school, then I needed to say like how accurate the algorithm would be for that school itself, because it's always important when a school buys such a product that they also know that it will actually perform well on their students as well.
Okay. Gotcha. And then where did you move on from there? You had a role at Funnelcake, and now you're at TalkIQ. Tell us a bit about those.
So at Funnelcake, that was a really small startup. So I was there one of the first employees, and there we were working on a combination of sales and marketing analytics. So from sales analytics, for example, we got data from Salesforce or HubSpot. And then for the marketing analytics, we had data from, for example, Marketo or HubSpot. And the goal there was like form by model, for example, like which pages of a website or your leads looking at during which part of your sales funnel. That way like, that marketing people can actually like tailor their message better to their leads.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Yeah. So the marketing and in TalkIQ?
TalkIQ, there we automatically transcribe sales and customer support calls, and then you're automatically deriving where is the customer happy, where are they complaining about the price, where are they saying that they want to buy the product, and automatically give all those moments to the clients. And then one of the big projects that I next am working on is like ranking these sales scores to see like which sales goals have a lot of potential and should lead into a sale, and which of the sales goals actually will have less potential and you should better leave those clients alone for now because they currently don't need the product.
Okay, very interesting. So you've applied data science in so many different industries, like from science and research to natural language processing, to education, to marketing, to now sales. Like this is very interesting journey. How does that feel? Like always constantly changing your either industry or area in which you're applying data science. Is that exciting, or does that come with some sort of, is it difficult to do that all the time?
It's actually exciting because the benefit from that way is like ideas that you have learned in one industry, you can actually transfer that to another industry.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, that way things also keep exciting and are not really getting boring.
Mm-hmm.
And also the nice thing that you also see in that way is like you also see like tools evolving, and also you see different methods evolving, which is actually really exciting. And it also allows you to work with different types of people, which also allows you to grow your network, so which is also fun.
Fantastic. And speaking of networks, you're very passionate about meetup groups. Let's talk a bit about that. How did this hobby start, that you're arranging meetup groups in your area?
So myself, originally, I went to a .NET user group, and then one of the user groups I actually loved the most was where there was like a hands-on session where you could play with some technology yourself.
Yep.
And then eventually I started going to KW Intersections the first time, and then they had like a meetup session about quantum computing. And the next time I went to that session, the organizer actually moved to Germany, so he couldn't keep organizing the meetup anymore. And so because no one else was interested in taking over the group, I actually took over the group and started building that group since then. And when I took over the group, we had like 120 members. So that was 2.5 years ago. And now we are reaching almost 600 members.
Wow. And how many people attend the meetups?
It depends a bit. It's like around 25 to 30 people.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when you have bigger ones, you can go to 40 to 45 people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wow. And how often are these meetups?
So KW Intersections is monthly, so it's each second Tuesday of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And then last November, I took over the Waterloo Data Science meetup. And since then, we are also meeting monthly. And then once in a while, I'm also helping out with Elasticsearch meetup. And I'm also active in the Women in Tech meetup group.
All right. And so let's talk a bit more about the benefits of meetup. What are the benefits of going to a meetup? What would you say to our listeners who've never been to a technical meetup? What's the use and what value will they get from going to a technical meetup?
So what I would say is, like, if you're studying alone at home, you always have the feeling that you're not progressing well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, it's also kind of depressing. But if you go to a technical meetup where people are passionate about the same things, then you actually can see like what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are. And then you sometimes actually might see like that you have more knowledge about certain topics than other people, which yeah. In a way also makes you feel good. A second thing is also that you indeed just learn new things together, that you meet new people, which is also exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And because also it just sometimes might be challenging for meeting new people because it's scary for everyone. But if you just go a lot of times to those meetups, you're less scared of it and you also feel more confident.
Uh-huh.
And also, it's, for example, also a way to just connect, for example, with extra women in the region or just to grow your network. So it's just pretty fun.
Yeah, that's cool. And I also wanted to comment on that for me, that generally meetups are quite useful, not just technical, but even like what you pointed out, that sitting at home alone all the time and working or studying can be, you feel that you're missing out, that you're not, that life is flying by sometimes. So getting out there and meeting other people and learning about their stories and socializing and in person, not just over the internet, can be very useful. And especially if you can combine it with something that you love, with a technical meetup on the topic that you are studying, such as data science, because then you will definitely find like-minded people and you'll have things to talk about. Okay, so that's the first part about meetups. What about hands-on sessions? So in preparation for this podcast, you mentioned that you have a really cool story about a hands-on session sessions are at technical meetups are important. So can you tell us a bit more about that? Why do you think hands-on sessions are important? And also, what's the cool story?
If you're like trying something out at home alone, and certainly with something technical, sometimes might get frustrating if things don't work out. Uh-huh. And if you're, for example, working together at a hands-on session, then you actually know what the struggles might be, and someone else might be able to help you out, and which will help you to actually go till the end of the session. And you have accomplished something, you feel happy, and in that way, you actually will be able to work further on it at home, and you feel more confident than if you just would have worked it alone at home at it. You maybe just would have given up about it. Mm-hmm. So actually, an exciting story what I have there is also like, I worked together with Elasticsearch Meetup a few months ago, mm-hmm. where I built like a hands-on session. So what I built there was like building a Twitter dashboard. So it was really like starting from the API. So getting your Twitter data, feeding them in Elasticsearch, built a dashboard. I also built a sentiment analyzer, and I made sure that all the information what people needed was like on a VM on USB keys. So everybody could install it, mm-hmm. and everybody could learn how to work with Elasticsearch. And there I also had a friend who now works at Elasticsearch, and then she told me about the ElasticCon conference, and she said that she could get me like a free ticket for the conference. Mm-hmm. And then also because of I'm a Woman in Tech, I got a minority grant for a free plane ticket, and actually organizing a meetup here in Canada gave me like a free ticket for the ElasticCon conference in San Francisco, mm-hmm. which allowed me to visit San Francisco for the first time in my life, mm-hmm. which was kind of exciting.
Mm-hmm. Nice, nice. Congratulations. That's really cool. Did you enjoy the conference?
Yeah, it was really nice. And my friend and I, we also actually were leading their Birds of a Feather session about using NLP with Elasticsearch. And we were had actually the session at the conference which had the most attendees, was kind of cool.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Well, that's congrats. That's awesome. Sounds really cool. So not only not only in the meetups, but like expanding your reach to other places as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, that's exciting. All right, what else can you tell us about meetups? What about organizing like the meetups? Is it difficult to organize? What are some tricks? Like, let's say somebody wants to start a meetup. By the way, one of our students who I met at Data Science Go last year, the first thing he did, Rico Meinl, he was also on the podcast, the first thing he did when he got back to Germany, he started a meetup. And I'm seeing this more and more, that people are being more proactive in the data science community and starting meetups. And so we had Lucy D'Agostino, who talked about meetups as well. And like a lot more people are getting into the space. And let's say somebody lives in a city where there isn't a data science meetup group and they want to get started. What would your recommendations on organizing one of these would be?
The big challenge what you always have first is finding a place where you can host a meetup. Uh-huh. So what I suggest there is like, for example, that you would ask your company or a company of friends whether they would provide like a small meeting room where you can organize your meetup.
Yeah.
And the second challenge is also indeed getting members first on your meetup group. Mm-hmm. That's like the challenging part if you're like organizing something for the first time, like will there actually people be showing up?
Yeah. And I think you shouldn't be discouraged if people don't show up or if like one person shows up. It's totally fine at the start, right? Like it's about the consistency. If you do it consistently and you have something to share, people will come eventually. But don't expect it right away.
Yeah, no, it's true, because like when I took over KW Intersections, like we had one meeting like that we only had like 11 people, which is kind of low. And then you just get a bit worried. But like now we have grown, like we have had sessions of 30 people, have sessions of 40 people. And then you're now sometimes worrying that your room actually is going to be too small.
The opposite problem now.
Yeah, I know, it's true. But and also what is important when you're starting a meetup is making sure that you have a plan for like the first three sessions.
Yeah, okay, that's a good tip. Why is that important?
It's easier to start a habit when you have done something three times than when you only have done something one or two times. Mm-hmm. And it also is important that people will get to know you, get to know the meetup, And it's not always that people will start to step up, like on a first meeting or a second meeting, that they will say, yeah, I'm definitely interested for speaking the next time. Mm-hmm. So that's also a bit of a tough thing. So just make sure you have like a plan for 3 meetings.
Okay. That's cool. So far we have 3 tips for those. Hope you guys are writing this down. For those who are planning on starting meetups or want to give it a go. First of all, figure out the space where you're going to have it. Talk to maybe your company or maybe local communities that can provide you a room, because it's important. If you want to meet up, you have to have a place to meet up. Or maybe you can go to some restaurant after on a non-busy night or something like that. Then don't be discouraged if you have low attendees on the first go. That's okay. That happens. And also have at least 3 meeting plans in mind when you start off. So to form that habit, to keep you going. Anything else? Any other tips you can share?
What also sometimes might help, but then you also need a sponsor, is like having some pizza or having some drinks, which also makes it a bit more like enjoyable. And also, like, for example, if you are focusing on a more technical topic, you might have more introvert people who are showing up. And don't try to have like a really heavy networking part in the beginning, because it actually might scare off some people.
Yeah, interesting. It kind of reminds me of what's happened at our, or kind of like, it contrasts with what happened at the Data Science Go last year in San Diego in 2017. We were kind of expecting like that it will be quite a challenge to get to people to socialize with each other, to you know, participate in communications and things like that. Kind of like the same what you just described, that in technical topics, a lot of time there's more introverted people, and therefore it's harder to get the conversations going. But what we found to our surprise was, when even before the conference started, when people were just waiting and they just got their badges and they're waiting in the lobby to, you know, proceed inside the room, everybody was talking to each other and they were having a great time and they were already making connections and so on. And somehow it just magically happened. So I don't know, maybe it was just like a lucky experience for us. Did you ever have a similar situation, or do you usually need to put in quite a bit of effort to encourage people to communicate with each other?
Actually, most of the times, indeed, it's like pretty fine. And what I actually also see is like people maybe not talking immediately from the beginning of a meetup, but at the end, they just keep talking.
Yeah, true. Once they get going, it's hard to stop.
But it's just sometimes what I have noticed once, like at a Women in Tech session, is like if there were like a lot of people there for the first time, you actually see that you're kind of nervous and just like sitting there and looking at each other. And what I did then was just like going around the room, say hello to everyone, asking where they were from and everything. And that also breaks the ice.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. It's about, you know, like, be getting out of your comfort zone and just like making that first step. And once you say hello and you introduce yourself, you know, after that, things are much easier and people are always going to be friendly, like 99% of the time.
So yeah, that's true.
That's good. Okay. Great advice there. So kind of like, I guess I would summarize that tip as, have a social component in mind. Don't focus on it too much and just let it happen, but also encourage people to converse with each other and maybe outline the importance or value of networking.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. What are some of the tips on the opposite side? This is a good one. What are some of the tips of going to a first meetup? So somebody who hasn't been to a first meetup, we already discussed that it's valuable and what value they can get out of it, why it's important. But what are some of the tips for a person going for the first time? Should they bring a pen and a paper? Should they take their laptop? Should they bring some water? Or, you know, like we've already talked about the socializing aspect, that's important, but what else?
So it depends, like if you need to bring your laptop for most of the sessions, they actually will say that it's a hands-on or something. And otherwise, indeed, you're probably fine without your laptop. Indeed, it's always easy to have like some paper with you. Otherwise, some business cards also might be helpful. Or otherwise, make sure that you have set up your LinkedIn, that you easily can connect with people or just can take a picture of people's badge, which indeed helps out a lot
Yeah.
And for the rest, you also just need to think like everybody has been once a first time at a meetup.
Yeah.
So that they don't need to be afraid about it.
That's a good tip, especially about the LinkedIn. I think that's very important. Guys, if you're listening to this and you don't have a LinkedIn yet, make sure you get one very soon. It's very, very important. Okay, and tell us a bit about like your personal side of things. What is one of the biggest accomplishments that you've had through your meetups?
So big accomplishment is indeed like the story I just mentioned about
The trip to San Francisco.
From San Francisco, but it also allowed me actually to grow my network here locally in Canada.
Yep.
Because when I moved over from Belgium, I didn't know anyone here. So it was for me like a way to get to know more people and also a way for me that people got to know me, which allowed me actually to land also in better jobs and find better opportunities.
Oh, interesting. And so going to meetups helped you network, which helped you actually land better jobs.
Yes, that's true.
Wow, you should have started this whole conversation with that. That's what people are after. Okay, great. That's awesome. So hear that, guys. Like, networking obviously can lead to more opportunities, and meetups is the best way to do it, because you're already in that city and you're already you're probably interested in job opportunities in your city. And so like, yes, you can connect with people online, which is great. But if you want to guarantee that they're in your place, in your location, then meetups will, you know, put that filter in place for you.
The important thing for this is actually also making sure that you're like actively participating, either, for example, through talks or helping organizing, because in that way you actually get noticed more than just like going there to a meetup. And it also just shows that you can give.
You can get value. You're proactive.
The need that you're proactive, so which is indeed important. And also what it helps out for me is like being able to share my story with other people, so you can connect with other data scientists, because that's also like a challenge at a company. For example, you only might be with a small group of data scientists. And for example, if you are at a startup, you actually might be the only data scientist.
Yeah.
And that's also important that you keep connecting with people with similar interests, that you also can learn extra from them.
Yeah.
So, and also if you just or actively like organizing it, you also get more confidence, which is also important for your jobs.
Yep, totally agree. So definitely worthwhile, especially if it's only like once a month, or you know, several times a month, or even once a week. It's not that much, like it's not going to take up that much of your time, and I'm sure there's places in your life where you could be a bit more efficient and save some time to then spend it on something like this, which has so many benefits, as we discussed. Okay, and any other ways that actively participating in meetups can help grow your career? So we've talked about that it's through like learning together and being able to overcome challenging topics that you wouldn't be able to overcome on your own. And also we talked about meeting people and networking with them and potentially getting more job opportunities. Anything else that comes to mind?
What also actually might help out there is like having more efficient meeting styles. For example.
Oh, that's a good one. So you will take away, sorry to interrupt, I'm just thinking out loud. So you'll take away those skills that you learn at a meetup and you'll apply them at work.
Yeah, that's true. Because, like, for example, if you are, like, participating in a bigger group, then you learn, like, different ways that other people are negotiating, which is important. Also, for example, sometimes you need to find sponsorship for your meetup, so which is also indeed important, skill to learn. And for KW Intersections, we now have a remote meetup in Montreal. So that was also, for me, like, learning how can I actually scale what I have learned here locally at a city which is 600 kilometers away. Also indeed an interesting challenge, like working with communities which are a bit farther away.
So you're planning on doing a meetup in Montreal now?
I recently did one already.
Okay. So did that go well?
It went well. We had like 30 people showing up, but was again like Elasticsearch talk that I was giving there, and it was pretty fun.
Okay, that's very cool. And so you use the meetup.com platform for these meetups, is that correct?
Yeah, that's true.
Is it convenient? How are you finding it?
It is convenient because it is suggesting through data science your meetup actually to people with similar interests.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And in that way, you can actually get extra members, which uh-huh. is a benefit. And also you yourself, you always get suggestions about meetups that might be interesting for you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an extra way for connecting with other people.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. I recently just started using meetup.com and I find it quite useful as well. For especially when you're like, but at the same time, it's a bit, sometimes a bit too much. Like I sign up for one meetup, like for rock climbing. And now all I get is like rock climbing and hiking recommendations. I'm like, come on. There's got to be something else in this city. It's interesting.
What you otherwise can do is like join the meetup groups of your students from data science, and then you will get data science recommendation in your city.
Yeah, okay, that's a good one. That's a good point. Okay, all right. Well, that's a good little excursus into the world of meetups. Thank you so much for that. That I think that'll be helpful for lots of people that have never been to a meetup or have never organized a meetup. So I think there's some useful advice on both fronts there. And kind of like slowly coming to an end of the podcast, what would you say are like the next important or major milestones in your career as a data scientist or in your work with meetup groups? What are some of the things that you're looking forward to?
For my career is trying to grow more like in a leadership role that I also can mentor
mm-hmm.
more people.
Mm-hmm.
And for meetups, what I would say there is like indeed working extra with other co-organizers so that I can mentor the people more and give ideas and that I not need to focus too much myself on doing all the organizing myself.
Mm-hmm.
And also maybe like having some bigger events where we can get like 100 people showing up, so
mm-hmm.
which would be great.
Yeah, wow, that's so cool. Well, it's a great aspiration. And by the way, I never asked, what city are you in case, you know, somebody's interested to come to your meetups or participate, like get in touch with you a bit closer?
So it's Kitchener-Waterloo. So we are like 100 kilometers away from Toronto in Canada.
Okay. Kitchener-Waterloo. You told me, I remember at the start, that it used to be two cities and then they grew together.
Yeah, it's still two cities, but it's like they're like really close together and therefore like they just call it now Kitchener-Waterloo. It's also because in Waterloo they have the university, but Kitchener is actually the bigger city.
Oh, okay, gotcha. It reminds me of the story of Budapest, that before it used to be two cities, two separate cities, and now it's like they've grown together. Well, quite a while ago they've grown together, but now it's like Budapest. It's one city.
Yeah. It's also a really beautiful city.
Yeah. So you've been?
Yeah, I've been there twice.
Okay.
It's already a long time ago, but I enjoyed it a lot.
That's nice. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's great having you here. What would you say are some of the best ways for our listeners to get in touch with you and to follow you and maybe get in contact about the meetups?
So they can definitely contact with me on LinkedIn or otherwise they can follow me on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. We'll put those in the show notes.
Okay.
What is your Twitter, by the way?
Loop_M. So okay. LOUB_M.
Okay, gotcha. And the meetup is called Intersections KW, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Thank you so much. And one more question for you today. I have, what's a book that you can recommend to our listeners?
Designing Data-Driven Applications.
Mm-hmm. Why is that book a good book to read?
Because it's covering the different aspects of data engineering and it is really starting like from the beginning, how you can model your data, how you can use SQL or how you can use NoSQL databases. It's covering parts about real-time and eventually it's also covering how the future of data engineering will look like.
Okay, fantastic. So Designing Data-Driven Applications, was it?
Yeah, that's true.
Awesome. Okay, well, once again, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was great to learn about the world of meetups and how people can get into it. Guys, if you're listening to this, then definitely check it out and also connect with Marie on LinkedIn and Twitter. Thank you, Marie, and it was a pleasure chatting.
Yeah, also a pleasure chatting with you.
So there you have it. That was Marie Lubel, a data science meetup organizer from Canada. Hope you enjoyed today's podcast and got some valuable insights. Definitely, if you're looking to organize a meetup, there were some valuable tips there. And as mentioned in the podcast, I'm seeing that more and more people are starting to organize data science meetups in their areas. I guess it's because it's such a great way to connect, learn together, and just feel how you're part of a community, feel how you're part of something much bigger than just yourself on your own. So if you would like to get into a data science meetup, then head on over to meetup.com and you can look them up there in your area, and highly encourage doing that. Even at least once a month would be ideal, but even if you can do it four times a year, once a quarter, that's already going to be very beneficial for your career. And we outlined some valuable points why that would be beneficial in today's session. Also, you can get the show notes for this episode at superdatascience.com/157. There we'll include a URL to Marie's LinkedIn and you can connect with her there. And of course, if you have any questions on how to organize your first meetup, I'm sure she'll be happy to help you out and assist with any additional information and insights. And on that note, thank you so much for being here today. I look forward to seeing you next time. And until then, happy analyzing.